From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter. Made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from Eskenazi Health. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. This week, we explore a bicentennial exhibition at Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, catch up with composer Tyrone Cooper, and learn about a local nonprofit created to promote Indianapolis music and musicians. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. On this week's program, we'll meet the new leadership of the Indianapolis Opera and go on the fast track for an Indianapolis Motor Speedway bicentennial exhibit. But first, Musical Family Tree is an Indianapolis-based nonprofit that aims to grow the Indianapolis music scene by archiving local recordings, curating shows, putting out new releases, and promoting Indiana music, past and present. Next Friday, they'll open a new space in the Murphy Building that will host a record store, performance space, and a resource center for local musicians. Contributor Ben Schein talks to Musical Family Tree's executive director, Aaron Jeter.
Aaron, what is Musical Family Tree?
Musical Family Tree is a nonprofit dedicated to creating a network of musicians, fans, and industry professionals who actively support and celebrate local music. You know, every artist on the planet, you know, whether it's a huge established artist or people who are just starting out, they've all started in a local scene where they made the connections, met the people and the musicians that gave them the skills and knowledge they needed to get where they are today. So Musical Family Tree gives Indiana musicians the ability to thrive by providing opportunities for paid performances, collaboration, education, and connections with valuable industry and community members.
That's great. You started off as a music archive, which I think is still pretty active, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Can you talk about that? Yeah. So a huge part of how Musical Family Tree started and is still a big part of our mission is an archive of Indiana music on our website, musicalfamilytree.com. We have over 1,500 artists from all over the state, all different genres, where you can listen to music for free, download it, and discover great new artists. There's a radio feature that plays a random artist from the archive, and we also do weekly playlists on Tuesdays that have an assortment of some of our favorites from all over the archive. So it's a great way to preserve the music that's being made in our state right now and help people discover new artists.
Yeah, and that's free for musicians to upload their music?
Absolutely,
and stuff.
Yeah. Anyone can go on our website. There's a big green button on the top of the page that says submit a band.
What other kind of stuff do? You have projects where you work with musicians. You do EP in a weekend. You do video in a day. What are those kind of projects that you do?
Absolutely. So a lot of our programs revolve around trying to foster collaboration and getting musicians to work with people they've never worked with before. So EP in a weekend, we get musicians together who have never played together, put them in a room in a studio for a weekend, and they write an EP and record it in one weekend.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. We've had some wonderful projects. You can go on our website, on our blog, and see all of our EP in a weekend programs. We also help put on an annual hip-hop festival, Trees, which mm-hmm. is one of the biggest hip-hop festivals in the Midwest. Now, this year was its second year, over 1,500 attendees and close to 90 hip-hop and DJ
wow.
acts. Another part of our programming is web content. In addition to the archive, we have a blog where we feature interviews with musicians, highlight upcoming music events, highlight music industry professionals, and that sort of helps us expose people to some of the great music events and some of the great artists that they might not have ever discovered otherwise. Curation is a really important part of what we do because when people know that Musical Family Tree is sort of an authority on great local music, they know that they can always come back to the blog, always come to our events, and find an artist that they may have never heard of otherwise, but that they're going to love.
That's really great. And next Friday, you guys are opening your first brick and mortar space in the Murphy Building in Fountain Square. Tell me about that.
Yeah, this is really exciting for us. This is going to be the first time that Musical Family Tree has had a permanent home. So this was where Joyful Noise Recordings used to be. Mm-hmm. Not long after I became the executive director, I knew that MFT had been interested in opening a space. And right after I became ED, Joyful Noise said that they were going to be moving out of their space. And the Murphy Center already has a great lineage of artists and studios and venues. So we knew that we would already have the audience there. People know they can go there to expect great music. And having a brick-and-mortar space just makes our programming and what we do that much more tangible for people. So in that space, we're going to have 3 to 5 shows every month,
wow.
And that's going to feature local and national acts. Weekly shows plus monthly educational and training opportunities for artists. So we're going to have panel discussions, master classes, workshops that will cover all different topics related to being a musician and being a business person, which is what musicians are.
Right. So what should people expect right away, and where do you see the space in like a year?
So right away, we already have about 5 shows booked for January, so they can already expect to come and see a lot of really great local shows, local bands. We are going to have a record store, so a small record store that will feature all Indiana music. So you can come in, buy your favorite records, discover something new, and we are also going to start our educational programs right away. So like us on Facebook, we'll always create a Facebook event for any of our shows and events, and we're also going to have a calendar on our website. So we also just launched a membership program that allows you to pay monthly to come to all of our shows, get free admission to our educational programs, and get a discount in our store, get a discount at Square Cat Vinyl, and admission to Fountain Square Brewery shows.
Wow.
So that has a lot of great benefits, helps us provide more programming. The money from those memberships goes directly to our programming and helps us pay all of the acts that come through our space.
Yeah, that is really important, you guys, to pay artists and to make sure they always are compensated for their work. I love that about Musical Family Tree.
Absolutely.
So about Aaron yourself, you're not just the executive director of Musical Family Tree. You're also a classically trained musician yourself who performs with all sorts of musical communities around town. Who do you play with? And what do you play, especially?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I'm a percussionist. More recently, a drum set player. I studied classical percussion in school. I got out of school, and I thought, I've been playing percussion my whole life almost, and I've never played in a rock band. There's something wrong with this picture. So I started playing drum set, and I now play with Elliot Bigger, sort of a shoegaze indie rock group. Mm-hmm. I play in a steel drum band, Steel Pan, Skyfall Steel Orchestra, and I also occasionally play in Derek Johnson's group, Ensemble Amp.
Tell us what you like about being a part of the local music community as a player and maybe as a professional.
Sure. So growing up, I lived in a pretty small city, and there weren't a lot of opportunities for going to see shows. There weren't many all-ages venues, and I felt like that was something really lacking for me. And moving to Indianapolis in a big city, this is the first large city that I've lived in. There are so many opportunities to see great music. There's such a wonderful sense of community here. Through my work with Musical Family Tree, I've met an unbelievable number of incredibly talented artists and people who are really devoted to supporting them, people like Carl Hofstetter at Joyful Noise, Ben Cannon with Spark Joy. There are so many people who really dedicate their lives to building a strong music community here.
What are a few ways people can get more engaged with local music?
Sure. So, you know, a big one is go to shows. Go find a spot that you really like. Even if it's just one bar that you like to frequent that has music, go there, support that venue, help them continue to host live music. And if there are bands that you know and love, buy their merchandise, buy their music. Don't just listen to it on Spotify. Provide that musician support and show them that you care about what they do. And tell your friends. If you find a local artist that you really love, Play it in your car when people are riding to work with you, and just expose local music that you really like intentionally to other people.
So with the new year and New Year's resolutions and all that, if you had a bucket list for Indianapolis music in 2017, what would be on it?
I think one big one would be for, like I just said, more people to start going to shows. Hi-Fi is about to expand their venue. There are a lot of great acts coming through in the next year. As more people learn about Indianapolis and we become more nationally recognized, there are going to be that many more shows and opportunities here. So if I had to put something on the bucket list, it would be for more people to actively go out and seek out local music. Then the other one is there are a lot of artists that are getting put on some big music festivals, which is really rad. So I'm excited to see in 2017 how many artists will be added to some of the big festival circuits. So I think a big bucket list would be for a record number of bands to be added to these big festival lineups.
That's really great. You know, as a fan of music, it's never been a better time to live in Indianapolis. And Aaron, thanks a lot for coming in today and talking about Musical Family Tree.
Ben Schein with Musical Family Tree Executive Director Aaron Jeter. Musical Family Tree's new space in the Murphy Building in Fountain Square opens next Friday. For more info, visit musicalfamilytree.com. Speaking of new homes, Chaos Company Theater also has a new home inside the Brookside Industrial Complex at 17th and Sherman Drive. Artistic Director and Founder Kaylee Spivey Good gives us a scoop on how the new space will help the company.
All right, before we talk about the new digs, tell us about the name. How did you settle on Chaos Company Theater?
Well, Chaos spelled with a K was actually the name of my thesis whenever I was getting my individualized major in European and Middle Eastern relations and theater and drama back when I went to Indiana University in 2011. I wrote a script entitled Chaos, and it was about the economic and immigration problems in Greece, which is where I studied abroad.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I
directed that script and put it up. It won the Outstanding Senior Project Award for my graduating class within the Individualized Major Department. And from there on, I kind of kept the name Chaos, and it just seemed like a fitting name to put to make for my company.
Anybody who's ever worked in theater behind the scenes knows that there, if there isn't a little bit of chaos before opening night, you're not doing it right. Or as my former colleague Brian Fonseca is fond of saying, if it's opening night, we're ready.
Definitely.
It doesn't matter if you need three more days or two more weeks. So tell me a little bit about your mission.
Well, we are a theater for urban emerging artists. We're a professional theater, non-equity. We're looking to bridge the gap between community theater and professional theater. There's a lot of actors out there, especially in the Indianapolis area, who have been professionally trained. They have the experience, and they're looking to get into equity, but have a lot of community theater, which community theater is wonderful, but they want a little bit more. So we're looking to bridge that gap between full-out equity theater and community theater. So we're somewhere in between. We're a professional theater, and we do pay our actors.
Okay. And for people who aren't maybe quite so inside theater, what is equity?
Equity is the theater union that actors typically join at a certain time in their career when they see that is fit for their career to be part of the union. Once you join the union, you can accept union jobs, and we're hoping to help out with our actors to get more experience and be able to go to that threshold.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. I'm intrigued by your range of repertoire, everything from classical Greek theater through Shakespeare through very contemporary work. How do you have a democratic process, or are you as the primary driver selecting repertoire? How does that work?
Actually, we collaborate with our artists, so we get a feel of different artists who have the experience and who feel like that they want to step up to going into directing. We get an idea of what they're looking to direct, and then we start filling in the gaps within our season. We don't want to limit any of the plays that we do, because obviously different actors are going to go different ways. Some are focused more on musicals. Some are Shakespeare focused. Some want to do new modern works, which is why you see that our season is a lot more varied than you might see on one company that might just focus on musicals or one company that might focus on Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. So it's very artist driven. We ask artists what they want to focus on, and then we bring the show for them.
Mm-hmm. And that's strikes me as a good fit for your actors, directors, and designers, all of your artists, too, because they get to experience a broad range of kinds
yes.
of plays.
Yes, yeah. definitely.
All right, let's talk about New Year, New Space. This is exciting. Tell us about, and I say space singular, but it's really multiple spaces.
Yes, it is. We're moving from a 900-square-foot space that hosted one stage to a 3,600-square-foot space. This space has three different stages, a black box main stage that seats an estimated of 75, a second stage that seats an estimated of 50, and a cabaret stage that seats 35 people, plus a conference room. And this stage is open for theater performances, other theater groups, event rentals, party rentals, playwright workshops, you name it. We're also looking for a partner theater group interested in sharing the space.
Mm-hmm.
So all our information about that is on our website at www.kctindy.com.
Mm-hmm. And there are more than 50 theater companies in Indianapolis, and most of them don't have permanent homes. So if you're representing one of those out there listening, you better go contact Chaos first.
Yes.
tell us a little bit about the neighborhood where this is.
Yes, we're located in the zip code 46218. I believe it's considered the Brightwood and
Martindale
neighborhood, yeah. Brightwood and Martindale neighborhood. And it's one of the more impoverished neighborhoods. We're hoping by locating on the Near East Side of Indianapolis, we can bring art to a neighborhood that is really needing some support and bring business there as well, especially with bringing in different people who would like to come see theater shows, bring them into the neighborhood, and hopefully be able to help out the neighborhood around us.
Chaos Company Theater's artistic director and owner, Kaylee Spivey Good. Learn more at kctindy.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, and I'm Sharon Gamble. Later this hour, if you're a longtime fan of the Indianapolis Opera, you're going to be delighted about the return of one of the company's guiding lights from the past. But first, Eat Drink Indy's Jolene Ketzenberger talks with West Fork Whiskey's Blake Jones.
Tell me a little bit of the backstory about the company, the name, for example, and where you're all from.
Absolutely. Thank you. So West Fork Whiskey was founded by three guys from a small town in Bedford, Indiana. We got our name because we wanted to pay homage somehow to Indianapolis and the state of Indiana. And the West Fork of the White River flows through Indianapolis. And so that was kind of how we got our name. And we always joked about starting and running a business together between us. So kicked around the idea for a little while. We all got passionate about whiskey independently. And lo and behold, David McIntyre, one of our partners, calls me one day and says, Blake, I filed our articles of incorporation. And so not long after that, we cashed out our 401ks, funded the company, and started making whiskey.
Now, when was that? Tell me the time frame.
So that would have been early 2014. In early 2015, applied for our license mid-2015. Start production in December of 2015.
So it's been a year that you started production.
That's right. We just had our first year anniversary last week, and that corresponded with our bourbon release.
So tell me a little bit about the products. You know, what you have, what just came out, and maybe what's in the works.
Absolutely. So we only do whiskey. We don't do gin, vodka, or any other spirit. And with that, our first product was Tour Delay, which is unaged corn whiskey. It's very sweet, butterscotchy. It'll finish very warm and sweet. Our second product, about the time we were putting some more money into the company, and was an aged corn whiskey. We named it Double Down because it kind of translated into, hey, we started making whiskey at a smaller scale, and now it's time to really put some money into the company and scale it up a little bit. We proved this concept, proved we can make a decent product. Now it's time to do it for real. And so that's Double Down. Our second product is a corn whiskey aged in used bourbon barrels. And our third product, which we're really proud of, is our first bourbon. It's a weeded bourbon, and we released it. It's called The Colonel. We released it last week.
How do you come to be involved in a distillery? I mean, how do you come to say in your 20s, I'm going to start a distillery?
Well, we got a little kick, again, from my partner. We'd always joked about starting a business, and we love whiskey. And we love the state of Indiana, and we always thought it was a shame that so much of Indiana's corn, or a significant amount of Indiana corn, went to Kentucky and Tennessee to make their bourbons and Tennessee whiskeys. It kind of upset us, and so we said, hey, we think we can do this. Our skill sets lend well to the spirit between the three of us, and Indiana's got makes some of the best corn, and corn makes great whiskey, and we have some of the best water with the limestone aquifers here in the state. So really the fundamentals were there to start a whiskey company. And so we said, you know what? Let's throw some money in the pot and start making some whiskey.
Now, you said you're all real fans of whiskey. Now, tell me about your background.
Yeah, so my dad's an amateur collector. We've tried everything from single malts to bourbons, Canadian whiskeys, Tennessee whiskeys, whole gambit. And so we just started drinking the spirit a lot before it became popular. And then over the last few years, it's obviously gone through a huge boom. And so we just love it. And we decided, hey, if we're going to start a business and we're going to take the risk and take the time and do something, we've got to be really passionate about what we're doing. We're passionate about really two things. That's Indiana and that's whiskey. And so we've really tried to combine those two things in West Fork Whiskey Company.
Now, where's it located? And what are your plans as far as trying to get your product out in front of people?
So today we're located in Traders Point area. We're not open to the public. Unfortunately, the laws have changed where we have a 3-year waiting period. So as I said, we're located in Traders Point today, but we're moving in May, the 17th and Bellefontaine, which is across the street from Cannonball Brewing. There's a lot of development going on in the 16th and the Monon area, between the new apartment complexes and Tinker Street's investment in the area and Cannonball Brewing. There's going to be a cafe close to us, a restaurant Caddy Corner. So it'll be a nice little cool hub right there close to 16th and the Monon. And so we'll going to move there in May or June. And with that, we'll come brand experiences of some type. So we'll open up to tours and educational experiences and things of that nature to allow people to start interacting with the brand. Although we won't legally be allowed to have a tasting room, it'll be a good way for consumers to get to know the brand a little bit better.
So where can people actually find the product right now?
You can find the product in many Crown Liquor locations, Elite Beverage locations, Classic Spirits on the north side, a handful of independents, Renaissance Hotel actually, and Carmel picked us up. And request it. I mean, every time you go out and you meet a bartender, you're in the liquor store, I mean, request the spirit and they can pick it up. We're distributed through to RNDC. Everyone asks for it everywhere you go.
You can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indie Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2 The Point. Indiana's official 200th birthday is over, but the bicentennial celebration of the state's automobile industry continues at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer took a tour and is here to tell us, what will we see, Jill?
Well, unlike previous car shows at the museum, Sharon, this one is really more about color and style than speed.
Stutz and Duesenberg in Indianapolis, Graham Page in Evansville.
The recorded voice of CBS Sunday morning host and Indiana native Jane Pauley is one of the first things that you hear when you walk into the exhibit. What you see in the space, the size of a department store showroom, are rows of automobiles, but not of the racing sort.
We have requested cars before, but mainly race cars, but not really passenger cars. So we've worked with both our collection internally and private owners across the state and select states to gain this collection that we have here now.
Jason Van Sickle is the assistant curator at the museum. It was his job to create the showcase, from contacting owners to rolling the automobiles in place by hand.
There was over 400 companies based out of Indiana, a staggering amount. And at one time it was rivaling Detroit and Toledo, Ohio for the number one producer of automobiles in the country. Mm-hmm. Bringing that heritage here to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum was something pretty exciting for me.
America's first front-wheel drive, the Cord, in Auburn and Connersville. Just some of the many automobiles manufactured in Indiana.
Some of the cars are from the museum's own collection.
This car right here is a Model A Duesenberg, and actually it was owned by Augie Duesenberg, one of the brothers that founded the Duesenberg Motor Company with Fred, his brother. It's a 3-seater roadster with a rumble seat, meaning the rear trunk pops open for extra seating for occupants. That's something that we don't have in today's cars.
Van Sickle says private collectors were delighted to loan their autos to the exhibit.
It's a Cord 812. It was produced in 1937. It's a pretty special car because it was designed by Gordon Burig, who was a very legendary auto designer at the time. It's front-wheel drive. It's a flathead V8 that's supercharged, and the cigarette white version that we have right here is actually the first supercharged model to roll off the line in 1937. It's the first automobile to have pop-up headlights.
I like all kinds of cars, not just race cars, so I think this is pretty neat as well. It's nice to look inside these older models and see, you know, the detail and the work that went into the construction.
Tom DeWeese brought his family from Kentucky to see the show.
I came here once when I was a child with my father a long time ago, so I wanted to come back and see, you know, see it again, appreciate it a little more when you're older.
His four-year-old son, Will, is still developing that appreciation.
Which cars did you like the best?
All of those cars.
Why do you like them?
Because.
Classy Cummins of Columbus built diesel-powered engines. Ralph Teeter, a blind man from Hagerstown, invented cruise control in 1945.
The history lesson continues on the walls. Cases display an assortment of Indiana automobile memorabilia, and a huge state map shows where the companies were based and cars were built.
It's neat to watch people kind of hang around that map and say, oh, I'm from Albany, Indiana. I didn't know that two different automobiles were made here. So it kind of gives you a special feeling that way.
The exhibit runs through March the 26th, and you can visit their website, which is indyracingmuseum.org, to find out hours and admission and more information. And coming up next, Sharon, as if this wasn't spectacular enough to see all these beautiful automobiles, they are doing a tribute to A.J. Foyt. They are,
wow.
The whole museum is going A.J.,
no
all
way.
Different areas of it. So they're doing it up. Doing it up large for
that,
AJ,
that
appropriately
is a,
so.
That's a big name. That's a legendary name.
And that one will also continue on into the month of May and probably into the fall sometime, too. So
fantastic.
A lot of people don't realize as well that the Speedway, the museum, is its own. It's not part of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So it's up to them to get their own money and put their own exhibits together and another reason to go out there and support it.
There we go. And I love the fact that you don't have to know all the statistics and what's under the hood to appreciate the beauty of the cars.
If you just like beauty, style, art, just pretty cars.
Sign me up. Pretty cars. I like it. If you've just tuned in, you are not listening to a sports show. You figured that out, right?
The pretty part gave it away.
The pretty part gave it away. We're girls. We like pretty cars. All right. We are feminists. Don't write to us. It's okay. But we do have some fun things that you might want to go out to enjoy on our calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
We have some pretty things and some sassy things.
And speaking of sassy, the Indianapolis Jazz Foundation, they're going to keep you warm in this wintry month of January. They have their vocal jazz workshop coming up on January the 14th. It's a Saturday from noon until 2 at the Jazz Kitchen. Butler vocal jazz instructor Aaron Benedict is going to be there. Gary Walters will be on the piano, Joel Tucker on the guitar, Gene Markowitz on the drums. It's a free workshop for high school, college, or adults. Anybody who wants to learn about jazz singing, what a great opportunity. I'm a terrible singer, but I might have to go anyway just to do it. And then also coming up on the Martin Luther King holiday at the Rhythm Discovery Center downtown. It's January the 16th, Martin Luther King Day. It's 11 to noon. This is their annual, their kid-friendly concert that they have down there. That they do the jazz quotes from Dr. King. Some IPS students get involved with it. And then the Hall of Fame musicians from the Indie Jazz Foundation will play as well, too. So once again, that's also nice free jazzy music for you coming up.
So Purgatory Golf Club, yes, that's a real name. It's in Noblesville. They're going to host an art exhibit called Ballerinas on the Green with an opening reception on January 13th from 6 to 9 o'clock in the evening. You can learn a lot more about Ballerinas on the Green by just Googling Ballerinas on the Green Purgatory Golf Club.
And the ISO, they're in the midst of their Music of the Earth Festival, and it runs through the 22nd at different venues all around town, including Indy Reads Books and, of course, down at the Hilbert Circle Theater. They're going to involve all different kinds of
songs that are going to pay tribute to the spirits and the environment, and they're going to do some yoga and all of that kind of fun stuff. A little bit of Strauss's Alpine Symphony, Mahler's The Song of the Earth, and of course two renditions of Vivaldi's The Four Seasons. And of course you can go to their website to find out more information on the different venues and the ticket prices as well. Once it's another one of those something for everyone to do.
I love it. Hey, if you are an artist or an arts administrator, you're probably aware that the Arts Council of Indianapolis has secured funding from the Lilly Endowment for another round of the wonderful Creative Renewal Arts Fellowships. Those are due here in just about 2.5 weeks. You'll have a story next week on The Art of the Matter that gives you even more evidence for why you should consider applying for one of those grants if you qualify. But the Arts Council is busy with lots of other projects as well, including working with the Nature Conservancy on the installation of Indiana Naturally, a juried exhibition of Indiana nature photography. This photography is on view through March 19th, 2017 at the Indianapolis International Airport. So if you're coming and going and seeing nature photography, those are the entities you can thank, Nature Conservancy and the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Hey, don't forget you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide, or tune in next week for our calendar we call What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, and I'm Sharon Gamble. The Indianapolis Opera is starting its new year with new leadership. David Craig Starkey joins the company as general director, and Robert Driver, who led the organization from 1981 to 1991, serves as artistic and new initiatives advisor. I invited them to tell me about themselves and their vision for the Indianapolis Opera. Mr. Driver, welcome back. Mr. Starkey, welcome to town.
Thank you.
What in this job attracted you?
Well, I would guess that would be to myself. And I've actually been quite aware of the Indianapolis Opera and the whole Indiana opera market. I went to the University, Indiana University's back in the early 90s for an opera degree and was very aware of the many singing and operatic aspects throughout the entire state. And I have continued to follow that all the years of my career and have continued to have wonderful relationships with Indiana University, with my deans and faculty and friends, and have also continued to follow the success of various kinds with Indianapolis Opera, but was very much involved with things behind the scenes for the last 3 years, and with my friend James Carraher, and then my friend Kevin Patterson and Carol Baker, and so was quite familiar with the up and downs and the ins and outs, and so it was sort of a natural and easy consideration to think about this opportunity.
And you point out something that it's worth remembering, which is in any specialized field, everybody knows everybody else. And Asheville's a few hours down the road,
sure is,
but not that hard, especially in the internet age, to keep up with everything. And you two might have met one another.
No, actually, that's the thing, is you just stated that we all know each other. Honestly, I admit, I did not know who Robert Driver was. I knew many of the people around him.
Sure.
I actually worked in the Philadelphia market as a singer. But when I was in the Northeast, Philadelphia was in a lot of transitional situations, which was the 90s.
Yeah.
But, you know, Robert Driver and I have come to understand that we know about everybody except ourselves, and now we do know ourselves.
It's kind of a miracle that we didn't meet, actually.
Well, you might have encountered one another, yeah. Robert, when you were here in the early 90s, and you were in school at IU. I'm sure you came up to performances here. So you might have chatted and just don't remember.
Don't remember.
Well, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to say you knew one another.
Okay.
So welcome back. So you know well this particular opera company.
Of course. I was here from 1981 to 91 before I went to Philadelphia, and it was a wonderful time. Indianapolis was really growing rapidly then, and it was very exciting. I think there's the same kind of excitement here now. But, of course, I think it's also just Indianapolis in Indiana, because when I'm not originally from Indiana. You know, I grew up in South America. But when I went to Philadelphia, everyone's just saying to me, gosh, you're so optimistic and you're so positive. Where are you from? I said, well, most recently, Indianapolis.
It was in the water in Indiana.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I you are not alone in pointing out that you know, we aren't a big city. We aren't New York City. We aren't Chicago. We aren't Philadelphia. We aren't L.A. We aren't San Francisco. We aren't Denver with beautiful natural resources. So we do try harder. And we, I think, maybe place a skosh more value on our artistic experiences because there's not as much competition for that.
We were talking about that yesterday at lunch with a group of people. Because I think one of the wonderful things about Indianapolis is there is this positive energy and this we can do it sort of attitude. And you're not, I mean, I loved Philadelphia, I have to tell you. And I went there because the Academy of Music and is America's most beautiful opera house. But the sense Philadelphia's wonderful city that it is lives under the shadow of New York.
Oh,
I never
right.
knew that until I got there,
uh-huh.
you know. But the other thing is that when I did come back here, because I retired in 2012 from Philadelphia after mm-hmm. over 20 years, my daughter said to me, because we kept our home here. We have a place in the country here on the Flat Rock River.
Oh, wow.
A little old mill house. And my daughter said, Dad, let's go back to Indiana. I said, okay. And so we have actually been enjoying it very much.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you have new news. You were one of the first outlets to have this story. You're changing up your repertoire a little bit. What's your next production?
Yes, we are. Right. Yes. So this is a tag team effort between Robert and I, because the industry has changed. Not is changing. It has changed, mm-hmm. and I think it's really important for people to know that. Not only it is the grand staples of the operatic repertory, as this institution has also ventured into 20th and 21st century operatic productions, which they have done recently to quite success, it is also part of the operatic repertory now these days for grand classical musical, or what the composers would call lyric theater. Rodgers, Hammerstein, Cole Porter, Gershwin—they called the term lyric theater. They were classically trained in their origins from their European training, and so we are going to switch out Jewel Box, great piece, but it's going to be more appropriate at a different time, mm-hmm. and we're going to bring in a production of Man of La Mancha.
Indianapolis Opera's new general director, David Craig Starkey, and artistic and new initiatives director, Robert Driver. Learn about their production of Man of La Mancha at indieopera.org. If you've watched any of the locally produced documentaries on WFYI TV 20, then you've probably heard the music of Emmy Award-winning composer and performer Tyron Cooper. He studied under the iconic jazz musician Dr. David Baker at the I.U. Jacobs School of Music, where he now serves as an assistant professor in the Department of African American and African Diaspora Studies. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer sat down to talk with Cooper about his latest project and his passion for music.
I realized when I started studying jazz officially or formally in college that I'd been doing jazz all my life. I lived jazz. From a sonic perspective or a music perspective, I'd been doing jazz in the black church when I grew up in Little Zion Church of God in Christ. We played jazz. It was improvisation at its best. Literally, the chords that I was playing when I was in church were little. I mean, they were major seventh chords, they were dominant chords, and all. I didn't know the names of these chords prior to going to school. I didn't learn how to read music until I went to college.
Oh,
so I played by ear the whole time for like probably the first 20 years of my life.
And how have you taken those skills then and incorporated them with your work at IU with students?
Well, I teach from the standpoint of immersion. You have to engage the experience of an artistic expression. You have to understand who the people are who created this expression, why these expressions were. And I don't care what type of music you're studying. You got to listen to it. If you're going to study Mozart, Wagner, Beethoven, you got to figure out who they were, what drove them. And so the same is true with the music that I teach, which is primarily Black popular music, along with, of course, sacred music as well. We dig into who these people were, what was going on social, what were the social conditions that prompted them to create these type of expressions, and what are the meanings that undergird these expressions?
What is it like when you see the student suddenly realize that light goes off in their head, that they understand the person they're studying as well as the music that they're playing? What's that feeling like? Do you suddenly see their music elevate to a different level?
It's so many different emotions that I feel. One, of as a teacher, I feel like, oh, they finally got it, right? But what I see in them is that they have learned that it's okay to be themselves and be true to who you are, right? It's okay, but also it's okay to be sensitive to who others are. Again, when you're playing in an ensemble, you got to get to know the person beside you. And that's beyond the notes. That's, I need to know, you know, why do you articulate in such a way? Well, it probably has to do with where they're from. It probably has to do with their social cultural upbringing. An eighth note in my culture may be totally different from an eighth note in your culture. Well, where's the middle ground? That's why music is so important, because it really has the power to bridge the gap between two different people from different places and bring them in together on one accord to create something that's life-changing.
Our listeners know your music because you've written a lot of the scores for a lot of the documentaries that WFYI has produced and aired. Mm-hmm. And now you are doing your own thing, which, like I said, I was just amazed to hear that this is the first time you've stepped back to release your own singles and your own music.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's been a long time coming. I finished a project in the 90s at the the emergence of the neo-soul movement. And I did a neo-soul project. I completed that. And it was a project that I thought it was a well-articulated project. But, you know, sometimes when you walk into the industry, the way you walk in is how you will be defined for the remainder of your career. And I knew that I was broader than, you know, just neo-soul. I wanted to, and as much as I love it, I wanted to be more diverse. And I think now as a mature artist, where I don't feel like I don't feel the need to just be one way on any given day, I can be whatever I feel. And that's the type of music I'm releasing. I'm just releasing music. I could be Brazilian today. I could be blues tomorrow. I could be gospel. I could be folk. I could be jazz. It doesn't matter. It's whatever I feel. I feel all types of eclectic emotions, but at the same time, they're all coming from a specific unified place of my own lived experience, how I view the world, and my own cultural background and expressions.
Tell me about some of the songs that you've released and what we have to look forward to as well.
I just released a song called The Healing Song. It's just people want a relief and to be a certain release from all of the ills that are going on. The people, I mean, we're at each other's throats, you know, and I'm saying there's got to be a better way. How do we come together and how do we see eye to eye? Where are the common grounds, you know? And so that song I released a couple days before the election. I'm also looking at another song to release called Let Us Reason. And this song is kind of from two different perspectives. You know, it's kind of two people talking, and he's saying, police brutality. What is, you know, and I'm telling you what it means from this perspective. And then the law officer is talking and saying, hey, well, you know, this is how we see it. And so the idea is that you don't know me. Why don't you just talk to me? I'm not so bad, my brother. Come in closer to me and let us reason.
Are you going to give us a little sample here?
Okay.
Or?
Let's see what I... I saw you on the news today. It's something I'll never forget. You were telling a story about me, but it wasn't about me at all. It was fear in black and blue, kneeling and fist raising too. It was hatred on the rise. It was kill or my demise. I realize you don't know me. Why don't you just talk to me? I'm not so bad, my brother, won't you see? Come close up to me and let us reason, yeah. You don't know me. I'm a human full of love, created from above like you, my brother. We should talk more to each other and let us reason.
This is a great song for the new year, to start us off in the new year, too.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm looking forward to putting that one out. I actually performed it at the Palladium. Yeah, opened
Which,
for...
Which, what a thrill that had to have been for you.
Yeah, opening for Dr. John at the Palladium. And I that was the first song that I performed. And the audience got it. You know, they got it. And it, like, literally, it doesn't matter what side of the equation you're on. Doesn't matter your political, social persuasion, whatever. You can get it, because at the end of the day, we all, you know, there's a desire to, you know, kind of figure out where you coming from. But if we move with love, we can do it.
You can download The Healing Song and Tyron's newest music from iTunes and Amazon, or visit his Facebook page, Art Salad Productions. Speaking of new music, this week A Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long highlights the five best local albums of 2016.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto, and I want to kick off 2017 by looking back at some of the best local music of 2016. So I have five songs to share with you from five of my favorite Indiana albums of 2016. Up first, I want to spin a track from the excellent self-titled album from Duran Jones and the Indications. Duran Jones attended IU Bloomington, where he was a member of the famed Indiana University Soul Review. Jones also performed with one of my favorite Bloomington groups, the Jefferson Street Parade Band. But it's Jones' solo debut we're focusing on here, and if you're a fan of retro soul acts like Sharon Jones, Leon Bridges, or Charles Bradley, you'll love this record from Duran Jones and the Indications. We're going to listen to the first track on the record, Make a Change. Talked a lot on Cultural Manifesto about the amazing new album Nappy Head from drummer and beatmaker Clint Breeze. Nappy Head features over a dozen poets, rappers, and jazz musicians. The record channels the spirit of classic Golden Age hip-hop groups like A Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul to make a powerful statement about racial oppression in modern America. If you're a hip-hop fan and you live in Indianapolis, this album is essential. We're going to listen to the first track on Nappy Head, Razor Blades, which features poet and MC Theon Lee on vocals, and Clint Breeze's band The Groove provide the sounds.
Take that to the head. Sharp as a razor, sharp as a game of life. Take that to the head. It's a razor blade, y'all.
David Moose Adamson is one of Indiana's most adventurous musicians. Adamson came to prominence with the experimental indie rock band Jukebox, but he spent the last few years crafting a highly individual form of avant-garde electronic music under the name Sedkarn Archives.
Sounds like a horse.
The latest album from Sedkarn Archives is titled Ubidoob. It was released on Indy's own Joyful Noise Recordings, and it features a kaleidoscopic collection of fascinating sounds and rhythms. Ubidoob was one of my favorite albums of the year, and we're going to listen to the track Sounds Like a Horse featuring Flacco on vocals. The Indianapolis rapper and musician Sirius Black put out a remarkable LP this year titled Nightcrawler. Black is one of Indiana's most poetic MCs, and on Nightcrawler, he explores the darker side of the human psyche, as we'll hear on the track we're going to sample, Static in the Rain. When I spoke to Black in October, he told me Static in the Rain is about using narcotics to cope with the pain of depression. Watch it all drown out slowly now. Watch it all drown out slowly. Watch it all drown out slowly now. Watch it all drown out slowly. And my final pick comes from the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir. In October, the Naxos American Classics label released a performance by the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir titled Zabor, a piece written by the critically acclaimed Arab-American composer Mohammed Farouz. Zabor was commissioned by the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir in 2015. It was the choir's first major label release, and a remarkable highlight for the Indianapolis music scene in 2016. Farouz has described Zabor as a war requiem, and the subject of this requiem is the unfolding humanitarian crisis in war-torn Syria. We're going to hear a clip of the choir performing Zabor Part 1. There was so much great local music released in 2016. It's difficult to whittle it all down to 5 picks, but I hope this list gave you a quick snapshot of the amazing work Hoosier musicians did last year.
Hear Kyle Long's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 9 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for spending some time with The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Today's contributors included Ben Schein and Jill Dittmeyer. You can hear our program twice each week on 90.1 FM, Saturday mornings at 7 and Thursday evenings at 8. And if you hear something you like and want to share, go to WFYI.org for our podcast. Next week, we'll hear how the band Bullet Points learned the truth of the expression, "Good things come to those who wait," and get a preview of a tribute to John Coltrane. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.